Hi, Kim.
Something's different today.
We both have different backgrounds.
We do have both different backgrounds. We're doing a different layout today.
Different layout, yes.
It's just the two of us today.
It is, and that's a little bit different.
It is a little different, and we're physically in the same building.
Yes, we are. We are geographically different as well as all of the above. And here we are in our nation's capital together.
We can touch each other. And for those that don't know, that means we're in Ottawa because we are in the Canada. We're in the country. So before we get too far, let's welcome everybody, shall we? Right? Because it's 2 p.m. on a Friday afternoon if you're joining us live, which means it is time for another Kick-Ass Career Conversation. Once again, I am Kim.
And I'm Louise.
And we are here to talk to each other today about this thing called a busy life. But before we do that, let's talk about what we always start our conversations with. Let's talk about what we're celebrating. What are we celebrating?
We might be celebrating the same thing today. I am celebrating you. I'm celebrating our friendship, our partnership, our business-ship, because we're partners, right, as friends, and we're also partners in business, too. And here we have been able to find the time in our busy lives to come together and have our little business retreat. Not even little. Well, I mean, I guess as little as it's two of us.
It's two, yeah.
However, we are looking to make some big changes. So it's going to be really cool. And I'm celebrating that because we put this as a priority and we made it happen.
Absolutely. And very much so. I am celebrating the same general, right? Absolutely. The love for each other, the love that we have for the work that we're doing in the world and how we're supporting the people, the organizations, the movements that we support, mm-hmm. and that we get to do that side by side along this journey together. Absolutely celebrating that. I'm also going to celebrate business class because I just got to say, I mean, I've always known that I like things nice, right? I like a little bit more posh in my life. That is true. And short little train ride, 90 minutes from Montreal to Ottawa. And I gave myself the opportunity to travel in business class. And even though it was a short train ride, it added the comfort that I was looking for, the ease, right? We all know I'm all about ease. So having that ability to know what I want and create an opportunity to get it. So absolutely celebrating us, celebrating what we're doing, celebrating what we're creating, and celebrating myself in the process of like knowing myself well enough to know that, right, this is something that's important to me. So I'm going to make that happen. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Business class rocks. So Louise, normally we introduce our guest and we talk about the crazy, right? Some of these crazy twists and turns we take in our careers. Before we get into today's topic, I'm wondering if maybe we want to, since we haven't done it in a while, we want to maybe share our own career journeys and what got us to this place, ooh, being in Ottawa, sharing and building on a business retreat together. How about that?
I love that because we do ask our guests all the time, right? How did you get here from there, right? Mm-hmm. And where was there? And, you know, you and I, we talk about this often, this place that we both landed in entrepreneurship, and we come at it from very different spaces. I never, ever in a kabillion years imagined that I would be an entrepreneur. I didn't have it in my family. It's not anything I saw with the friends that I had or growing up, anything at all. And I found my place in, you know, that career path, that career journey that was laid out in front of me from probably the time, high school time, right? Mm-hmm. Just this very prescriptive idea of what all of that looked like, right? You go to school, you get an education, you go to university, you get an education, you get out, you get a job, and you work for the next 40 years doing the same thing, because that's what my family did. Mm-hmm. Pretty much everyone in my family worked at the same job for a long time. And so that was my career path that I thought was laid out in front of me. And it worked, I guess, sort of. It worked for a while. And then not working, right? And then all of a sudden, or it felt like all of a sudden, being in a bit of a career crisis. And right after decades of project management and IT and all of those things that I collected along the way of a 25-year career, I really did hit a wall, and I felt like I couldn't find my way, never mind my way forward. I couldn't find my way, period. Around, I couldn't find my way sideways. I couldn't find my way backwards. I actually couldn't find my way. And that's when I took a break from all of that, from that pushing energy, right? And really started to step back and say, if I didn't push so hard, what are my opportunities, or where can I go, or what does that look like? And I found my way to entrepreneurship. And I kind of said, well, that other way wasn't working, so let's give this a try. And I could always pivot again. I could always try something new again. And here I am, right? I've been running my little growing business for the last 6 years. I just celebrated my 6th anniversary in March.
Congratulations.
Thanks. And so in all of that, it's been a crazy journey too, because what I thought my business would be or look like is not what my business is now. And that's okay. But it was this whole idea of that the experiences that we collect along the way, we never set that down, right? We don't have to. We get to figure out how to use those tools in our in that next, right, revision, or that next thing that we want, that reinvention, and what that can look like. Yeah.
Sorry, it's hot in here. I'm trying to open the door. Oh, there's no screen on the window.
Oh, don't fall out.
A little creepy. This is what happens when, right, you navigate, right, navigating this career, navigating a space that is unknown to us. Sometimes you find a window that you could potentially fall out of. And so what do you do to adjust to that? And that's what I heard in your story of, like, knowing that you hit the wall, and then how do I adjust? What do I need? What were some of the things that you were experiencing when you hit that wall?
Oh, a lot of anxiety, a lot of burnout and overwhelm. Right. That's the wall. When I couldn't continue to push through anymore. Yeah. I tell my story, and maybe I've told it here, I think in bits and pieces, really around, like, my wall was crying in the parking lot before I went into work, like feeling nauseous, having the Sunday scaries, right? Starting Sunday morning about what is Monday going to look like, and then having a week that got really hard and looking forward to that Friday. And I didn't want to spend my life like that. I didn't want to continue doing that. That's not who I am. That's not how I want to show up. But I did do that for quite some time, just hanging on to this belief that it's going to get better. It's just got to get better. If it got worse, it's got to get better. Right. And it was that ability to take a step away from all of that and look at what I wanted to put out into the world from a much different lens, from a different perspective.
That it was funny, because we looked at a trailer last night about a movie that was about perspective, right? We decided not to watch, we decided to go to a comedy instead. But this idea of perspective, and getting a new perspective, what did it take to get yourself there?
What did it take to get myself a new perspective? It's funny, because when I hear the word perspective, that's like it's an outward thing, right? Like, mm-hmm. what do I see? What is my perspective? What is, I think that's even a thing in painting, right? Like what that focal point, right? Your perspective. Yeah. And so it feels like it's out there. You can't see me. It's out there. There it is. I'm talking with my hands. And yet it's not, right? It was the inner work that I needed to do to gain a different perspective. It doesn't come from out there. It came from inside. And I don't think I ever thought about the work that I do in the world in that way before. It was always something I did, something out there. Mm-hmm. I never fully integrated or fully embodied. I know that's your word, but mm-hmm. I never really fully embodied it. And when you hit a wall, at least for me, when I hit a wall and got to that point, it's like, I can't keep doing what I've done because it's not working. I don't know why it's not working, but it's not working. And so what's a different perspective that I need to take? And I went on a journey, and it was through coaching, to be quite honest, that I was able to access those parts of me so that I could build a different story, so that I could create a different narrative, and that I could show up still myself, or maybe even more myself in the world of work.
Yeah. That obviously, right. We're on retreat. We're talking about that inner work ourselves, and that much in the work that I do, it is about embodiment. It is about the turning that lens inward. And yet there's also that opportunity when we are doing our inner work is to look at the periphery. Right. And I think I talked about this on a recent episode as well. It's what's just outside our vision that allows us to get even a totally new focal point. We spend so much time here, like right in front of us, or maybe a little further down the road. Like, what are we focused on? Okay, maybe we can turn that lens inward. What are we focused on? And right, I'm touching like the center part of my body, because we think about like, who is the core of me? What do I need? And yet we very often forget that there's a whole space around our bodies, a whole space around our careers, a whole space around our businesses that we never pay attention to. And yet there's such juicy information there. And that's what I'm hearing is when you took this new perspective and when you were kind of coached through and worked to find that new perspective, it wasn't just about, okay, let me fill out, an assessment or a roster of what I like and what I don't like. It wasn't a pros and cons list, although that may have happened. It wasn't purely about that. It was really about, what am I not seeing, right? And where can I find something else?
Yeah, but it's like also, what am I not feeling?
Yeah.
What am I not hearing? What am I not saying? It's not just like, what are we not seeing? Yep. It's like all of those things, right?
Yes. Oh, you're so speaking my language right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So Kim, I know like for you, your journey to entrepreneurship was different than mine, but you weren't always an entrepreneur. You had many different careers, many different hats.
I did. But I will correct one thing. I was also always an entrepreneur. I had my first business at age 8. So I always had a business. And when people like the terminology side hustle or side business came out, I was like, oh yeah, I guess I have that. But I always thought of it as like, I always had my own business. So being an entrepreneur has been a part of my journey all along, making that the focal point of my career. Started about 7 years ago as I started to transition into that. We lost Louise. Hopefully she'll be right back. Let's see. Are you back now?
I am, but you got to bring me up.
I did. You're on the stage.
Oh.
Hi, Louise.
It says I'm backstage, so hi.
Hi. Okay, you're live. This is the fun of when you're not, right? Pivoting. find navigating the way to things you don't know. So welcome back. You're live again. So what I was saying was, so being an entrepreneur was not always the focal point of my career. It really became the focal point of my career about 7 years ago. Although I didn't, it's been 3 years that I've been a full-time entrepreneur. 7 years ago was when I made the decision that that was the direction I was focused on. But yeah, for me, I mean, I came from, so multi-passionate individual. I have, a lot of interests, and, from a young age, I bristled when people would ask me, what do you want to be when you grow up? That then turned into me bristling with the, you know, tell me about yourself. What do you do? I'm like, well, that's not myself. That's telling you what I do. Those are two very different questions. And so that started in college for me, where I had 11 majors and it took me 7 years to graduate with my undergrad. But I had, like, in my mind, I had 11 majors. And it did take me then 7 years to get through college because I wanted to try everything. I wanted to experience it. I wanted the buffet of life. I have joked before that you put me in front of the buffet of life, I'm going to be face down in that sucker eating everything because that's just what I want to do. I left college after I graduated with my undergrad. I was in theater. So I was in the performing arts. I burned out. I definitely hit burnout. It was very challenging. The direction that I wanted to go with it wasn't fully aligning with opportunities that were available. And so I did what was natural and I pivoted and I went to law school. I mean, that's what everybody does, right? They go from being in entertainment to law school. So I went to law school, became a practicing attorney, felt really out of alignment with a lot of what was happening within the legal sector. And that was when I started to really practice what I now have words for, but I didn't then, my embodiment practices. I started to really get into, right, what my body was telling me. The information it was giving me. Am I okay? Am I safe? Am I doing something I enjoy? Am I with people that light me up or deplete me? So starting to recognize that was when I started with mindfulness and meditation and all sorts of different practices because I was burning out and I needed to protect myself so I could do the work, right? Because I was trying to focus on this place of what do I do? How am I making a difference in the world? I did decide that practicing law was not for me. And I went into the nonprofit sector because as somebody who wants to change the world, that's where I needed to be. Mm-hmm. Wow, did I put those embodiment practices to work in a big way, because what I didn't realize was how much of the generational trauma, personal trauma, all of the things that have kind of come up in my past that I was continuing to heal from were being triggered on a regular basis with the work that I was doing. Not only me, but I was seeing it in people that I was working with and that I cared about, and as well as the people that I was serving. Mm-hmm. So it was very challenging. And I dove more deeply into those embodiment practices, not knowing, right, that was like becoming a core strength of mine that I could support other people with. So when I decided to leave nonprofit and go into the entrepreneurial sector, I started as a nonprofit consultant. I was like, I'm going to go in and fix the nonprofit sector by consulting and making it better from that direction. And there are a lot of nonprofit consultants doing a lot of great work. That was not the work that I was meant to do. Now, while I can consult and I do consult with nonprofits, it's not in a very typical way. Right. And I bring something else to the table. And I think it's that place of embodiment. I shifted and pivoted it within my own entrepreneurial journey to what I provide now, which really are those services for the leaders within those organizations to run their organizations and lead together as a team from a place of embodiment. Right.
Right.
So yeah. It's blending, like, I pulled all these different threads. I used what I did in my entertainment world. I used what I did in my legal world. I used what I did in my nonprofit sector. Like, all of that is absolutely part of what I'm doing. And a bigger part of that is who I became during that process that I now get to share with the world. But it was not like, I set out initially, I was going to own a restaurant. Like I wanted to be, I didn't want to be a chef. I love cooking, but I didn't want to be the chef. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be a restaurateur. And then I wanted to be a director producer. Right. All these other things were just things that opened up for me.
Yeah. Also, you know, when I hear your story, I hear that ability to know that, you're almost pivoting before the wall, right? Like you're like, right. And it's this idea of that, I think maybe regardless of who you work for, yourself or for others, mm-hmm. right? When we are fully feeling empowered, that we have the ability to shift, to change, to more, whatever that is, that's kind of that almost that CEO mindset that we mm-hmm. carry. Like, how are we the CEO of ourselves? What are we doing? How are we showing up? And that's regardless of who's writing the paychecks. Mm-hmm.
For sure. Yeah. I think that place of, and I loved how you put it, of pivoting before I hit the wall. Mm-hmm. It's some level of sonar that I, at some point in my life, became aware of, that is not going to be sustainable if I continue in that direction. What do I need to do for myself? And for myself, it was body practices, right? It's like to bring myself back to self in a very real way, and then make decisions from that place versus making decisions from that like very frenzied. I think of the cats that like have the fur that go in every direction, and it's like that place. That's how I would starting to feel. And I'm like, I don't want to make a decision from this place. So it's bringing self back to self and then deciding from there.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, as we think about the world of work and who we are and how we show up in the world, what we want to do, the change that we want to make, we do carry a lot of baggage. I'm just going to call it baggage because that's what it is. We carry some of this trauma, capital T or small T trauma with us when we're showing up, maybe trying to look for that next step or that next whatever, right? That next evolution of who we are. And our baggage can prevent us or encourage us to evolve in what's next for us in our career.
Yeah.
One of the things you and I were talking about earlier today was this hustle word, right? Mm-hmm. This how part of the hustle culture, like where we are currently in the world and how much of ourselves we put out into the work that we do comes from this idea of that we need to hustle. We need to put all time, money, energy, whatever that is, into the thing that we're doing. And it, I think it kind of folds into what we wanted to talk about today around that busyness of who we are when we are at work and how that impacts us. I almost saw that the word hustle kind of comes with its own freaking trauma, to be honest.
100%. One of the things that I've noticed on social media, which I love, is there's definitely a pushback at this point, not just in the entrepreneurial circle, but across the board of this is not what life is about. Mm. Right. And so this idea of navigating a busy life, busyness, as somebody who's multi-passionate, who's also a Manny Gen, right? Like in human design, manifesting generator, I have that generator part of me where I want to be doing things. Right? Yes, I'm a human being, but this human being wants to be in motion. And yet, when we think of busyness, the constant push to do more, to do it faster, to do it bigger, to do it better, versus I'm doing the thing in an intentional, thoughtful way, is like, I don't think we're built that way. We're not made to be constantly pushing, even those of us who have the generator as part of us. And while we're a large part of the population, we're not the only part of the population. So leaves out a big part of the population when we say, like, do more, do faster, do. I don't think we're built to be busy.
Oh, well, and that's not just a human design thing that we're not built right. That way. That there's like brain science that goes on behind the scenes there too, because we aren't. Like, we actually need the time to be able to connect ideas, to connect thoughts, to be creative, to use our gut and our heart, our hut, right? In what we put out into the world. And when we are constantly in motion, we lose so much of that. Mm-hmm. We lose access to those creative, innovative parts of who we are, because all we are doing is moving as fast as we can in a direction.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. And it is, I think when we're talking about navigating this, right? Because the reality is we live in a society that is still asking us to go fast. I mean, society is asking us to go fast. It's asking us to be all the things, do all the things. How do we navigate? How do we work our way through? Like, we just talked about working our way through our careers and into entrepreneurship. How do we navigate the fact that society has this press to show up in a certain way, to be valued?
Well, so I think, like, when you say that, what comes to immediately to mind is that true? Like, how much of it is true, and how much of it is our trauma or that story we're carrying with ourselves to say that I need to show up in this particular way in order to climb the ladder, in order to get recognized, in order to make my business successful? I think some of it is our environment that we're in, and some of it is the way we're showing up. I think it, like, there's some of both in that story that we carry. And there are going to be some things we can control and some things we can't. And I believe, and what I coach is, like, let's find those things around the story that we have that we can then start to rewrite. So now that we can start to change a culture at work, or start to change, you know, what's going on in this hustle space, because it is out there. But there's also a part inside of us that we're carrying with us to say, we have to hustle, that we have to be doing this, we have to be doing that. And I just don't think that's true. I think there's part of that story that we get to rewrite. And so that we have the time, the energy, and the faculties about us, the access to our innovation and creativity in order to change the hustle culture outside in society and in our workplaces.
Well, I don't disagree that there is that mindset component of it, that changing our stories, changing our narratives does help how we show up and make the decision as to whether or not we're going to subscribe to that train of thought or not. I think there is the reality also, and I'm trying to think if this is true. I somewhat think it's a little bit less in, I'm going to take that back. It's not. I don't think it matters whether you work for yourself or somebody else. It doesn't matter if you have a team or if you don't have a team. There are expectations that are placed upon us. I believe the mindset part of it comes into play when we choose what we do with that information, right? But to me, there's a very big reality that there is a press. I'm trying to not speak about this in terms of energetics, but I don't know how else to do it. There is an energetic press to show up and do things in a specific way. We just left Louise again. She will be back momentarily. So this idea of this pressure, this energetic pressure to show up in the world in a way that is getting shit done, right? And my belief is that always staying in that place. Welcome back, Louise.
Thanks.
Staying in that place where we're always feeling the pressure to get shit done is real. So we can have the mindset to not subscribe to it. And that's not going to stop the pressure that exists to, right? If you, so one of my clients is a nonprofit. There's a very real thing that sometimes they only get 2 weeks to respond to, you know, $30,000, $50,000, $60,000 grants. It's like you have 2 weeks to do it, which means that this very small staff has to put their other work aside if they want to get funding. That's not a mindset thing.
Oh, and but I don't see that as a hustle culture thing either. There's a deadline, and that we need to be matching what we're putting out to the world, where we're spending our time and energy to make the most of whatever opportunity that is. But I think the hustle culture, like that, it's that ongoing over and over and over again. When one thing ends, it's the next thing, it's the next thing, it's the next thing. And I just don't think that's not a sustainable way to build a business, either if you're an entrepreneur. It's not a sustainable way as a organization or a corporation to keep your staff or to keep your innovation or creativity or your whole business moving forward. I don't believe that's sustainable in the long run at all. And we've seen that. We've seen companies burn through their staff and absolutely tank, right? At innovation, at creativity, at holding their own in any space. And so much like stress, we're not saying that stress is a bad thing. We're not saying that deadlines are a bad thing or goals are a bad thing. It's that when it's this extended period of time where it's like, go, 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 go all of the time, we just can't access any of that. And so understanding and being able to adjust how you're showing up, what's important, right? In your work, in your life, being able to have the capacity to know what's important, I think can help you navigate through that. But for sure, I think there's ebbs and flows to business. There's ebbs and flows to life. And as we know that, but there's a flow to every ebb, right? And I think that's part of it too, is to understand that we can't constantly be putting it's like running a marathon at a sprint pace. We can't do it.
Right. Well, I don't disagree with that at all. I think what I'm saying is that while we can make those decisions internally, I can't run at that race. It can have, or at that pace constantly, it can have detrimental effects, right? If we are, and again, I want to just go back to this example of this nonprofit. Because it's fairly universal, not just in the nonprofit, mm-hmm. but also, right, we see it in other types of businesses where our interests are pulled to know, like, we don't have control over that. And so what we do have control over, not just based on what you're saying, but I agree with it, is how we choose to respond mm-hmm. to those external pressures. And I think all I was doing was saying, I don't want us to ignore that those external pressures are extremely real. And when we're talking about navigating the external pressures, not just so to me, hustle culture, while it's an external pressure, is actually an internal pressure. I have to keep up with what's happening versus the very real external pressures that we do come up against with deadlines. Like, we've overloaded our calendar, we've overloaded our client roster, things that you and I have talked about that do feel like, this is too busy. Mm-hmm. This is too much. Mm-hmm. It's those external pressures that we do still need to navigate, but we don't have control over. And right. So when we're navigating those, I do think there's the mindset absolutely is supportive in that. And how do we choose when we say enough is enough, to go back to what we were talking about before, that sonar of, right, pivoting before you hit the wall. How do we know enough's enough.
Ooh, I love that you use the word sonar, because I think that's a big part of it, right? We might think, how do you help? Because you're the embodiment coach. You're the come from that space. How do you help people fine tune their sonar? Because I think that's really the key, right? Where that's the tool we're talking about.
Yeah. Well, so much of, and I think this is where I was also getting a little stuck in the muck with the mindset, is so much of what we do is our minds. So much of what we do, we operate in the world through our thoughts. And it's to hone our skill of intuition, our sonar, we have to get out of our minds. We have to get out of our thoughts. We have to start experimenting with what our body feels like, have a relationship with our body. And through that, we can start to deepen it and deepen it and deepen it to that place of embodiment. And when we are in connection with, when we're in relationship with the feeling part of our body, right, activating all of our senses, we do get to that place of spidey sense, right? And that's really what sonar is. The next part of it is to actually take action from that place, not to just say, I have this sense. And I think that, right, that's where we get stuck. If we've started to recognize that our body is actually giving us information and we're feeling something, right, whether it's in our heart, whether it's in our gut, whether it's in our big toe, it doesn't really matter. It's our unique body. It's going to give us information. And the closer we're in relationship with our body, the more we're going to understand it. Once we have that place of understanding, we actually have to do something with it. Because the more we say, oh, I have a sense. I was on a call with a client this morning, and she said, right, I have my spidey senses. I said, great. So how are you taking action on those spidey senses? Well, I don't know if they're actually telling me the truth. Well, then what you're doing is you're telling your body, you're telling your sonar system that you don't trust it. And so what are the outcomes going to be? Right. Then you're just going to continue doing the same things. What about for you? How do you work with people on their huts, on their sonar?
Well, I think, you know, what we're talking about too is this ability to know that what you're doing from here, from when you're operating from here, that we need to step off. We need to step out of here. And so you're working with your client. Your logic space, right? And so when we can step out of it, but we need to actually step out of the hustle. We need to step out of the noise. We need to step out of what we're doing, because it's this hamster wheel that we're stuck on. And we can be running the hamster wheel and going, oh, look at that. I'm on a hamster wheel, and still keep running and not be able to do anything else than run. And so we need that opportunity in our lives to actually pause, to step off of that, so that we can learn to understand what our body is saying, so hear it, feel it, see it, taste it, smell it, whatever, however it comes up for you, and then figure out how to act on it. What action are we taking? Because I think, like with my clients, it's just that I can't step off the hamster wheel. I'm going to lose my place. I'm going to lose my pace. I'm going to lose. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and you're not winning because you're not going anywhere. Yeah. And so how do we just step off? How do we pause? There's so much power in the pause. How do we pause so that we can start to reconnect with that, learn first what our body is telling us, learn how to trust it, and then take action on it, right? We can't immediately jump to action, because that's what got us in trouble in the first place.
Yep. And so it's interesting, because I think it takes us back around to what we were both celebrating today, which is being on retreat.
Yeah.
And the thing that I know firsthand is as human beings, we don't take enough time for retreat. retreating is an opportunity to slow down and be very intentional and thoughtful in one area of your life. So if it is about movement, maybe you go on a yoga retreat because you want to slow down and really understand what's happening in your body, in your mind, in your soul when you're practicing yoga. If you want to work on your business, retreating and having that opportunity, whether it's by yourself or with others, having an opportunity to create space to focus on your business, on your career, on your family, right? Vacations would be amazing if we actually treated them like retreats.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. We get back from vacation saying we need a vacation from our vacation.
Mm-hmm. We treat our vacations like we treat the rest of our lives. We treat it like work, right? There's stuff to do. There's places to go. There's deadlines. There's stuff. Right?
Because we like being busy.
Same hamster wheel. It could be hamster work.
So Louise, what are your golden nuggets from today, from our conversation?
It's so funny because the word that you said, retreat, right? And it's funny because it's like, at first it feels like we are giving up, right? Like when we are fighting the fight and we can't win, we retreat. And I think it's really about owning that word to say, this isn't my fight, or it's not my battle, or it's not some place that I can continually push through, and I need to recover. I need to recoup. And then I need to reimagine how to step into this next place in the world of work, whatever that looks like. So it was that word, and that's what came up for me, Kim. So I think that's my nugget that I want to take away from today.
You know, it is true, right? Because that word does mean to as an army or to withdraw, but it just means that. It just means to withdraw.
Yeah.
So it's I find it to be something that is so necessary to resettle our nervous systems, to resettle our brains, to resettle our bodies, to resettle all of the, you know, again, as a multi-passionate person, it's really easy for me to be like, and this, and this, and this, and this, and I get excited and I want to go and I'm doing all the things. And then I'm like, okay, wait, lost the plot. Let me just retreat so that I can pull those threads together and go, got it. And then I can keep going. Retreating, withdrawing, having those opportunities, just like you were talking about earlier with creativity and innovation.
Yeah.
Creating space and time for withdrawal, whether it is, you know, media detox, putting our phones on silent or turning it off and right, just allowing ourselves any type of retreat that we can create for ourselves on a regular basis to focus on one thing, right? Sometimes it is just focus on rest.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's to focus on creativity, whatever that is, but allowing ourselves to withdraw from the busyness, I think that is a key component of is we're going to, in the society we live in, we're going to keep, and it gets us all like jonesy. We get all excited about all the things. I do anyway. And, and retreating allows us to settle into ourselves a little bit more, so we can make sense of all the stuff and we can be more creative. We can be more. So that's my little nugget.
I love it.
So Madhir, where can people find us in the world, and why in the world would they want to do that?
Well, you can hear us every week live here on LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube, wherever you are tuning in from every week at the same time. You can also catch us as a podcast. So maybe you're listening to us as a podcast, so you know we drop live episodes every week. from our conversations here weekly. You can also find us on yourkickasscareer.com. That's where you will see our events and what we're up to as a partnership and what we're putting out into the world. So please do drop by there and check it out. You'll also be able to find some access into our new InspireEyes network. You can learn more about that on our website. So next week, please tune in because it's going to be a great conversation about redefining. It's kind of like 2.0 from this conversation, mm-hmm. I think, really about redefining your career with Fairlane and your career identity. So please do that and check us out. We will not be in the same location next week.
But it is the same bat time and same bat channel.
Right. As always. So absolutely. Kim, is there anything you want to say before we sign off today?
Just that I hope that everybody has a wonderful week ahead. I know we're at the end of this week, but looking ahead to next week, what do you want to feel or experience in the next 7 days? And let us know when you come back next week.
Love it. Thank you so much. Thanks everyone for tuning in today. And just listening and participating. We had some great comments show up too. So thank you so much, everyone. Take care.
Bye, everyone.
Bye for now.